Hello and welcome to FX Talk, an eBrief podcast where we break down some of the main news headlines in the financial markets and give our take on what these developments might mean for the world of foreign exchange. My name is Matthew Ryan, Senior Market Analyst here at eBrief, and I'm delighted to be joined on the podcast by two of my colleagues, our Chief Risk Officer, Enrique Diaz-Alvarez, and Market Analyst, Roman Zaruk. So this podcast is all about the foreign exchange market. We're going to take a look at some of the main news stories in FX, discuss them, and give our view on what they might mean for currencies going forward. So it's Tuesday the 4th of August, and it's time for episode 7 of FX Talk. And on the podcast today, we'll talk about the latest GDP numbers out of both the US and the Euro area. We'll then talk about our thoughts ahead of Thursday's Bank of England meeting. And as always, end of our spotlight currency for the week, which this week is the Russian ruble. But before all that, a summary of the past week in the FX market. The dollar has found a little bit of support against its major peers, recovering some of its losses earlier in the week after suffering from its worst monthly performance in trade-weighted terms in 10 years in July. As we'll talk about shortly, it was confirmed that both the US and the euro area economies suffered from their worst contractions in GDP since the Second World War in the second quarter of the year. But data out of both has pointed to a pickup in activity in the third quarter, with the latest PMI numbers for July printing firmly above the level of 50 that denotes expansion. Meanwhile, sterling has managed to hold on to its gains, trading just above the 130 level versus the dollar ahead of this Thursday's Bank of England meeting. Now, with that out of the way, on with the podcast. Okay, so we'll get going with our first topic of the day. And we've got a pretty busy week lined up in the FX market this week. A number of political and central bank announcements eyed, and a host of data releases as well. In fact, we've actually had quite a few tier one data prints out of the major economies in the past few days, notably the initial estimates for GDP for the second quarter out of the euro area and the US. Now, these numbers do, of course, run a little bit of a lag, so tend not to shift the currency markets too much. But they do give us a decent idea as to how the major economic areas performed during the worst of the COVID-induced downturn. Having said that, we have a few contrasting headlines surrounding these numbers, particularly the US data, which comes down really to how it's reported. So many outlets have reported a 9.5% contraction in growth in GDP, I should say, in the US in the second quarter, which of course is a year-on-year measure. So how the economy performed relative to the same time a year previous. This doesn't sound overly dramatic. It was actually slightly better than the 15% contraction recorded in the euro area. Whereas the annualized number, well, this is a number that's more widely used when reported US GDP. That showed a near 33% contraction in the second quarter, which appears dramatically more doom and gloom than that year-on-year number. So I'll turn it over to you both now. So which one of these are we actually paying closest attention to, and where does this discrepancy in the data come from?
Okay, I mean, normally I would pay more attention to the US version, the annualized, because the implicit assumption is that growth in one quarter will be not very dissimilar from the next. This is a very steady measure, so it makes sense to annualize it to get a sense of how the company, the economy is performing on a year-to-year basis. But whenever you have exceptional circumstances, a quarter that is very unlikely to be repeated, like we had in the second quarter worldwide with the lockdown, it really doesn't make sense. It's better to look at the quarterly non-annualized number, because we're very likely to get a very sharp rebound the next quarter. And there's a lot of uncertainty over the following quarters, but we know that the numbers are going to be very volatile. So in that sense, I think that it makes sense to compare, to look at the US as a slightly above 10% contraction and compare that to Europe. In that measure, it would have seemed that the US is doing better than Europe. But I would argue that, I mean, somewhat counterintuitively, it's a higher contraction, a bigger contraction is actually a reflection of the more aggressive measures that the European Union implemented back in April and May. And therefore, it's in a sense a more positive indicator of the ability of the European authorities to get the pandemic under control. And I think that what we're going to see is a much faster rebound, with a deeper contraction in the Eurozone than the US, but we'll see a faster rebound in the coming quarters.
Yeah, actually, the current economic data for July, if we look at the PMI numbers, seems to confirm that. So in the Eurozone and also in the United Kingdom, we have seen a pretty big positives. While in the US, the numbers have either disappointed or they have been close to the expectations, and they have been lower than those in the Eurozone. So I think that we have some early sign that this might actually be the case, what you're just telling about. And on the other hand, there's also this issue with the US labor market. One of the reasons we think that the situation in Europe will be better is because companies tried not to lay off workers because they were supported by the government, while the US took a different approach and they decided that there are no real limits on that, at least not as significant as in the Eurozone countries, but instead they are going to support the unemployed, or at least they did support the unemployed, because this unemployment support, at least the additional $600 check, ran out at the end of July. So right now they are debating on whether and to what extent this help should be continued. But we don't have yet an agreement on that. And I think that this is a big issue. And right now we are also seeing some worrying signs in the US labor market. If we look at the past two releases, especially the last one, the initial jobless claims for the second time have increased. And this is the second time since March that such thing happened. And also the continuing claims, they are roughly where they were a week before. There is a 1 week difference between the initial claims and continuing claims, but all of these data points are generally quite current, and they are reflecting the situation after some states decided to stop easing lockdown measures or generally reverse them. So this is a negative sign, especially considering that the unemployed just run out of those additional benefits.
Yeah, I think the US economy said, clearly, as you said, Enrique, not going to perform as it did in Q2 during the rest of the whole year. Although we have seen a little bit of few disappointing data releases on the labour front, as you mentioned, Roman. I think it's worth saying that clearly the worst of the downturn is over. Activity is expected to pick up again in Q3, all being well. Roman, you did mention we have seen a few signs of that already. And if you look at Monday's manufacturing PMI from ISM, beat expectations, the market's eyeing a pretty robust number from the non-manufacturing PMI on Wednesday, which should be slightly more significant, have a bigger impact on the FX market, we think. And investors are fairly hopeful we'll get another decent month of job creation on Friday, the monthly payrolls report. I actually think there is a little bit of a chance we could see a bit of a surprise to the downside in Friday's number. My argument being, of course, we've seen US virus numbers remain high and actually increase over the past month. Many states reintroducing shutdown, lockdown measures. And Roman, again, as you mentioned, actually we've seen weekly jobless claims have ticked up again in the past couple of weeks. And it's the first time it's done that since the beginning of the crisis. So I think we could see a little bit of an undershooting in that headline payrolls number, which would be a bit of a blow to the US dollar at the end of the week. And what do you think, Enrique, ahead of Friday's payrolls report?
Yeah, I agree that I think that if anything, when I look at the market expecting somewhere in the order of 1.4, 1.5 million net jobs being created, I would take the under over the over there. I think that that number is probably a bit too optimistic. It does not reflect the modest disappointments that we've seen in the more frequent weekly numbers. And it does not reflect both the reimposing of lockdown measures in some of the southern and western states, and also more importantly, the uncertainty that those reimpositions of lockdown measures may have on business sentiment, especially small business sentiment, and therefore on hiring. So I think that we're more likely to see a disappointment than a positive surprise.
Okay, I think we should potentially move our focus now and shift our attention to the UK and this Thursday's monetary policy announcement from the Bank of England. Now, no change in policy is expected from the MPC, and we certainly don't think they'll touch interest rates at the moment, despite talking about recent talk, I should say, about the possibility of negative rates being explored at some point. We also don't think they'll increase their QE program just yet. It was, of course, ramped up by another £100 billion as recently as a June meeting, which was the last time the MPC met. So we think that Powell said probably likely take his cue from the central bank's accompanying communications and their economic projections. As it does every other MPC meeting, the Bank of England will release its updated GDP and inflation forecasts. And the inflation forecast is probably not going to receive a huge amount of attention in the markets, but we think that the GDP numbers almost certainly will. As we mentioned in our Bank of England preview report, we get a more optimistic appraisal from the Bank of England that leans towards a more V-shaped recovery in the economy. Then we think we could see some support for sterling. Whereas it's a more doom and gloom assessment that highlights potential risks of a second wave could likely weigh on the pound. And then, of course, we have Governor Bailey's press conference. And the focus here will probably be largely on whether or not they keep negative interest rates on the table. If that was the case, if we were to see Bailey seriously or indicate that the bank is seriously considering lowering rates below zero at some point, then we could see the pound under heavy selling pressure later this week. Anyway, what's your thoughts, guys, ahead of Thursday's Bank of England meeting?
I think it's unlikely that we see such heavy pressure materialize. I think that that the Bank of England must be more or less pleased with where the markets are. With sterling trading in trade-weighted terms, trading around the middle of the range of the last few years, with interest rates de facto zero or bouncing against the zero limit, with significant fiscal stimulus announced from the Boris Johnson government. I think that much like the last meeting, the Bank of England attitude in this meeting will be to wait and see. There's a lot of stimulus on the pipeline, both fiscal and monetary, and I think that the correct stance is to wait to see what happens in the third quarter before making any dramatic announcements or changes in policy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth mentioning that the QE program was ramped up during the last meeting in June. But generally, there was one person who opposed it, and it was the chief economist. And I think that, at least judging by his rhetoric in July, that he opposed it because the situation in the UK economy looks quite good. So he said in July that actually the economy so far has performed in line with the V-shaped recovery. And basically, the economic data that we have received since he delivered these comments have been pretty optimistic. If we look at the retail sales data, if we look at the PMIs for the UK, the recent PMIs, if we look at the composite index, this has been better than any of the economists expected. So I think this is quite interesting. And I would personally be interested to see whether other economists will follow what he said, because I saw some opposition or some differing comments between the MPC members in July. So it's interesting to see whether some larger number of them will get some signs of optimism and whether we are going to see that in their communications. Now, but I generally don't think that this will be a significantly market moving event. I think that we can count on some changes to the QE program, because I don't expect negative interest rates in the UK. I think we can possibly count on some changes in the QE program only in possibly October or around that date, not really earlier.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it will be interesting to see whether we do get any more members of the MPC share this view that Andy Haldane did at the last meeting, whether we are closer to that V shape than they thought potentially at the last meeting. We have had some pretty strong data out of the UK retail sales, for instance, and in June were very strong. Lags the US and Eurozone in May, but I think that was largely due to the fact that the UK was slightly more cautious in easing its lockdown measures than many other developed areas. But I think, yeah, as you said, I think it's probably too soon for the bank to start talking about either potential changes to its QE program or negative interest rates. I think the focus will be on these economic projections. And if there are no big surprises there, then yeah, we may have some comments from Governor Bailey on the possibility of negative rates. But I don't think it will firmly indicate that they're on the immediate horizon. You merely may say that the possibility of negative rates are under constant review. And if they do say that, I don't think we'll see too much reaction in the pound this week.
Yeah, I mean, getting rid of this scenario in the communication, I think, is not something that they would want to do. And keeping the doors open, just as the policymakers in the US to doing more, I think, is helpful in what they are trying to achieve now. So I don't really think that they would want to say that we are not going to do it, or something that they are just like going to do. We are going to use all the available tools or some similar comments, and that the markets will not really budge.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no real benefit in ruling out negative rates at this time, I think. Okay, so I think we'll end with our spotlight currency for the week, which this week is a Russian ruble. Now, in this section, spotlight section, we tend to focus on currencies and review currencies that have been notable movers in the FX market, and the ruble certainly falls into that category. I think if we look at the FX performance tracker over the past couple of months or so, the ruble has been the worst performer in the emerging market universe. It's shed over 5% of its value versus the dollar in the past 2 months, which of course itself has been broadly weaker. So against the euro, the Russian ruble is now down almost 12% in the last month, which is quite a staggering sell-off. So to kick things off from my perspective, I think we're seeing a host of factors working against the ruble at the moment. There's a couple of things really I'd like to highlight that I think both you guys will want to talk about as well. First of all, is still very low global oil prices that we're seeing at the moment, which is Russia's largest export. Brent crude oil prices have picked up slightly in the past few months, although this recovery has lagged, say, stock markets, for instance, and prices are still down around about 35% year to date, which likely to provide a significant drag on the Russian economy. And the second one is this concerning spread of the virus we're witnessing in Russia. Russia now has the fourth highest number of virus cases in the world. While new cases have eased, it's been much more gradual than we've witnessed elsewhere. So we've seen a 50% drop in new daily cases in Russia from the peak versus closer to 90% we witnessed in the euro area. And in fact, there's been doubts regarding these numbers that suggest it could even be higher in reality. But I'll turn over to you both. What do you think has driven this underperformance in the Russian ruble?
It's interesting. I'm a bit at a loss. I mean, initially, clearly, it was the collapse in the oil prices was exacerbated the fall in all dependent currencies. But granted that the numbers that might not be as reliable as elsewhere, but still it's very difficult to argue a case that the Russian economy or the Russian Russia is more affected by the pandemic than places like Southern Europe or the United States. And second, the fundamentals presented for the Russian economy are some of the most solid of any emerging market. First of all, they have an oil-dependent, commodity export-dependent economy, which is probably the sector that's going to be least affected directly by the pandemic because they're not very labor intensive, or it's relatively easy to conduct the activity without maintaining social distance. It's the other extreme from like the tourism economies that you see in Italy or Spain. In terms of finance, it has one of the most robust, least fragile financial structures in the world with massive FX reserves that have been increasing recently. Positive current account, some of the highest real rates where with interest rates significantly above inflation. From a fundamental perspective, almost every indicator points towards ruble strength, and right now it's against the euro, for instance, is floating with all time lows. So to me, it's a very attractive currency right now.
Yeah, so I generally would agree that Russia has some of the probably best fundamentals among the emerging market countries. But if we look at the recent performance of the ruble, I think that it basically comes down to two things. So one is the fact that during the summer period, the ruble usually tends to perform badly because this is a dividend payout season and July is the height of it. So generally, this tends to depress the ruble against the main currencies, and we have seen it historically. And the other thing that actually happened in July was the fact that there were some personal sanctions on the Russian businessman and some political figure like the Chechnya's leader, Ramzan Kadyrov. And this, I think, has reimposed this possibility that there might be something bigger on the way. We are seeing that the, when it comes to the international relations, the United States seems to be getting more aggressive, at least if you look at this the stance on China and also the recent sanctions on Russia, on the Russian individuals, and generally the US rhetorics towards other countries. I think that it's becoming a little bit hostile. And this is because it's also a quite unpredictable administration. I would say that the investors are probably factoring in the possibility that there might be some further sanctions down the road. And ruble has reacted to such events in the past and to such risks. So I think that in the short term, this is what we are seeing. On the other hand, when it comes to fundamentals, I agree that on the surface, they look really perfect. But generally, the fact that Russia has so much reserves or a high current account surplus basically tells a story of imbalance. And this is a positive imbalance. So it's much better than what we are seeing in countries like Turkey. But this is still an imbalance. And some other indicators that are saying that Russia is not really, that the Russian currency should be relatively stable, or actually should perform better than other emerging market currencies. In my view, they are not as important. So for instance, if we look at the foreign debt, the countries such as Poland has a significantly higher foreign exchange debt, denominated debt than Russia, but the currency is not really affected by it. And we are seeing a multiple exemption of it. So I think that Russia is one of those few exceptions that although they have a relatively strong fundamentals on paper, I would not look at only that because there are some other idiosyncratic factors like the fact that they might be subject to sanctions from the US, like the fact that the situation with the coronavirus, yes, it's improving, but we don't know whether to trust the numbers and we don't know where it's going really in the future. So I would be rather cautious regarding the ruble and not only look at the fundamentals, but the bigger picture.
So it sounds like, well, we've got a solid buy from you, Enrique. Buy, sell or hold the ruble, Roman?
I would say hold because I think that the recent sell-off has been quite strong, quite maybe even excessive, but I would probably not buy ruble right now.
Okay. I probably tend to err with Enrico on this one. I think it's a slight buy for me purely from an economic perspective. I think, as Enrico said, it's one of the strongest fundamentally, very high FX reserves. The central bank can protect the currency as much as it would like. Very low levels of external debt, which generally seems to be seen by investors as lower risk, and with a current account that's firmly in positive. I do think that the sell-off we've seen in the ruble has been slightly unjustified.
And that just about does it from us. If you're keen to hear more about our thoughts on the currency markets, visit Ebury's website or follow us on social media. And don't forget to rate and review the podcast on your favourite podcast app and let us know if there are any topics you would like to hear more on during upcoming podcasts. Keep an eye out for our next episode in a week's time. Thank you all very much for listening.